Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello friends, Josh here, not with another sponsorship, but just a little bit of housekeeping before we get into the episode proper. So we recorded this two-parter Q&A literally about 12 hours before Scott's wife went into labour. So as a result, the introduction is a little bit messy. I don't even think we introduced the show by name, and I just kind of wanted to say here exactly what you're getting into. So this is an off-topic Q&A that is entirely based around your questions that you sent in, and we are so grateful for the response we got. It was truly incredible and overwhelming in the best possible way. Thank you so much. Essentially, this week's episode and next week's are going to be a little bit of a special one-off celebration, or I guess two-off celebration, as they were the last podcasts that Scott recorded before going away on paternity leave. We had a lot of fun recording both of them, and hopefully you all enjoy it as much as we did. Again, thank you so much. This literally wouldn't have been possible without you all getting in touch, and we'll see you next week for part two. Anyway, that's enough from me. Here's the episode.
Josh Brown, they say the content never sleeps, but it's more like coming out of an exorcism over and over again. You just think it's done. You think you might lie down, get on with something else. But no, it pops up and it says, Habana, 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 I'm coming after you.
How many exorcisms have you had?
Too many, my friend. Too many content-cisms over and over again. Even to try and carve out the time to record this podcast, five of the things cropped up whack-a-mole style to be able to actually get them out the way to say stuff.
The power of the internet is such that by the time this goes up and the people listen to it, you will be a dad. You won't be here.
We'll see.
You'll be coming back, of course, but you won't be here for paternity leave and having a little break with your child.
Yeah.
But the beauty is, lives are going to change when this is up. I hope
plus
that's
one.
Not too... I'm trying to freak her out every time we talk about it. I'm like talking about them in the most superlative terms
no,
possible.
No one could genuinely freak me out more than the reality of me about to be a dad and then sitting thinking of every waking second of my life to this point, thinking about every single moral or rule that I live by and how do I pass that on, and then just... thinking about keeping them alive. Nothing in words is ever going to replicate that feeling.
I had a hamster once, right? And that was too much responsibility. You know what I mean?
Like, I don't even look after plants. And I'm going to be a dad. Like, it's ludicrous.
Well, that's what your kid's for. You get them to an age where they look after the plants and they look after the hamster. Then it's not your problem.
Oh, man. One of the best things was thinking about an excuse to get a guinea pig or a hamster or a rabbit.
Ooh,
like a starter pet that, like, you can't do. I wanted to get a rabbit as a full-grown adult man.
Yeah.
And my wife would not let me. And I was like, but they're so cool.
I'm surprised now that I think about it. You've had your house for years at this point. It's a lovely house. You've got a nice big garden.
Thank you very much.
Never been tempted to get a cat or a dog?
Oh, very much tempted. I'm hypoallergenic, so I'm allergic to like the vast majority of cats.
Oh,
so
okay.
I'm more of a cat man than a dog man. But if I'm getting a cat, it has to be on this list of like I think it's 12 approved breeds.
That's harsh.
It is, and because those breeds are more rare, then the price tag is very high.
Mm.
And so there was one. There are some cheaper hypoallergenic cats that you can get, but I really wanted, if we were going to do it and get something to look after for like 10 years or whatever, I really wanted to get a Russian Blue, which is like a really beautiful. Kind of like a Sheba kind of gray, lovely little cat. But then when you look at the prices for them, it's like £200.
That seems cheap.
Does it? I always had rescue cats growing up.
Right.
So like, okay. I've looked after 5 cats in my lifetime, but they're always family cats, but they were always rescue cats.
I've never bought like an animal in my life on that scale. Like, I've never bought a dog or anything. Mm. But like, every time my friends talk about, you know, buying a dog, not from like a rescue shelter or whatever, it's like £1,000, £800, £600.
Some of them are. I mean, it depends, because sometimes you're paying for like them to be like pre-wormed, or you might pay for them to already have like a chip in their collar so that if they go missing, you can dial it in on an app or something.
All of that is so alien to me. I didn't have a dog until I was like 17, so I never like grew up with one. Go back now and see him. Winston, he's called. He's really lovely.
Oh, that's a great, any older like sort of gentleman name is the best name for a cat.
I
like
agree.
Arthur the cat or Albert,
and a child. There you go, Winston. Child name.
Look, I'm fighting every urge not to call him Jin.
You should.
I mean, I might do.
Oh, that's crazy. By the time this goes up, you'll have a name for your kid.
Do you know what's really weird about that, trying to like, because they give you a due date for all this stuff, and shout out to any other potential in proximity dads. Like, I'm due on the 13th, but like 96% of all kids don't hit their due date.
Yeah.
So especially with boys, apparently boys are always longer. And if it's your first kid, then it can take longer anyway. So like, yeah, the whole thing of like trying to schedule and be like, oh, you'll be this by this time, it might not be that at all. So I have no idea.
Well, Scott, I don't want to cut you off, but we've got a lot of questions today, specifically about you being a dad. So we'll save some of that good stuff for a bit, because we are recording a lot of different episodes for the wind-up while you're away. This is going to be a two-parter where we're answering your questions, and we will hopefully, fingers crossed, have a two-parter on the worst games of all time, or at least our respective choices for that. Mm-hmm. But I put the tweet out, posted on Instagram, put the Q&A on Spotify, asking people to get in touch, and the response was truly overwhelming in the best possible way.
Everyone is very, very beautiful.
70 to 80 questions, all of which were excellent. We're going to get as through as many as we possibly can across these two episodes. The point of this is like an off-topic one, but we did get some great gaming ones. I'm going to start off with one, but the rest I'm going to save for maybe even a part three down the line when you return, because I do want to get to them all at some point.
Yes, you've curated and collated this whole thing. I'm just along for the ride at this point.
Yeah,
and
well, you know, I thought I'd give you a nice one to, you know, on a nice little chill Thursday afternoon that we're
recording.
You've
got a cup of wine as well.
Oh, I certainly do.
I was
saving it so I could do the opening on this, because congratulations, Scott.
Oh,
can you hear that?
Yeah.
You're going to be a dad. You're going to be a dad. Lives are going to change.
I would join you in having some sort of alcoholic beverage, but at the minute, because the idea that Sprog can appear at any time has got me very aware of my phone.
Oh, this wasn't for you. This is all for me.
That's fair enough.
Yeah, that's the issue.
The other day, by the time this goes up, it'll be the other day, we were recording the news and my phone buzzed. Lovely little innocent message telling me about some food I'm going to be having.
Yeah.
And I thought it was the baby on the way.
I've never seen panic cross a man's face with such severity before.
I tell you what I'm curious about is right now, as we're recording this, I'm 2 weeks out from the due date.
Yeah.
I don't know what the average person does in regards to freeing up as much time as possible. Mm. Like, I've been able, because of the job that we have, to do more working from home. I can kind of, I can be ready. I can be at home. But I do have a car full of hospital bags. I'm ready to go, kind of thing. But I don't know what the average person does, because you're sort of like, or I'm just cracking on as if everything's okay.
Yeah.
Being like, well, it's 2 weeks away, don't worry about it. And then one of my friends has a couple, they were also due the day before us, went into labor like the night before.
Wow.
Like yesterday as we're recording this. And I was like, it can happen 2 weeks
early.
It
can happen whenever. Yeah.
What are we doing?
It happens when it happens. I'm so scared of it happening while recording this podcast. That phone is going to start blinking. And I'm very tragic. But I'd love to be there. I was going to say something and I completely forgot.
Something about wine.
Something about wine. Something about you. It doesn't matter. I can't remember.
Being a dad.
It's all gone.
Being on the wine.
A dad. It's going to be nice. It's going to be incredible. And our first questions are actually about you being a dad.
Thank you.
People got in touch. And Richard Smith said, major congrats to Scott on becoming a dad. My wee girl is too soon. And I can tell you that it's the greatest joy you'll ever experience in this life.
Beautiful.
Are there any games you're looking forward to showing your kiddo when they're more cognitive? Mine is Ocarina and the OG Spyro.
We talk about this a lot, or I think about this a lot, in terms of like introducing a new generation to the next, what are you going to give them? Like, I don't want to just give them Fortnite. I don't want to give them the new stuff. I want them to have the same appreciation for the medium that I do, or at least give them a bevy of stuff. I remember when me and my wife, she'd never dunked a biscuit before. And we made a big platter of all the different biscuits and we went through them one by one. We graded them all. And then, because we're just that cool. And then we, to do a proper experience. So in this regard, it's going to be Mario. It's going to be the early stuff. It might even be the original Mario.
Yeah.
I'm so curious. Does a tiny child's mind, and Richard Smith's kid might already be aware of this, does a tiny child mind know that these are old games? Or are they just happy to play them?
Yeah.
If you give a kid Super Mario World, do they go, this is from 1992, Dad, what are you doing? where's Fortnite? Because obviously the school's going to influence all that stuff, all their friends and everything. But is there a little window there where you can actually just get them to play stuff without them being like, oh, it's outdated?
Yeah, I think you've got, well, I don't know how it is now with access to the internet, iPads, phones and all of that, that kids might get earlier than we did, you know. Our entire, at least for me, I can't speak for yourself, but my entire world when I was growing up was whatever my mum and dad taught me it was.
Totally.
You know what I mean? So anything they introduced me to, I just thought was fresh and it was brand new. So the first PlayStation, no, first console I ever played was the PlayStation 1. But by that point, the PlayStation 2 was just around the corner and I did not know that for a long time. So I do think you have a nice window until they go to nursery or school.
That's
where
the thing.
You can kind of curate it a little bit, introduce them to certain things, and they're not going to be going, Dad, why can't I buy V-Bucks off the Fortnite store?
Well, that's the thing. And I want to be like, hey, let's play some 2D stuff and you'll get a feel for that. And then like, hey, this is what like the PlayStation 1 brought to the game or whatever. Oh, that's 3D. Or like, are they going to go to nursery and be like, all the kids' games over there are like in HD,
yeah,
and you're making me play all this fuzzy stuff.
That was
I don't
me
know.
When I was little. Dad, why aren't the ear cartilages right on this?
I want to see the lobes, Dad. It's something to do with replicating the journey through gaming that I had, without being too laborious with it. But I do think you need the classics. Same thing with the movies, like trying to pick which movie to show them. Like, they're going to just watch the original Star Wars.
It's fascinating, right? Because I think we talked about it maybe on another podcast.
Sounds like it.
Where we were saying, you know, you can try to push a kid in the right direction, but there's no guarantee that they'll end up liking what you like. And you hope that something like Mario, like Zelda, like Star Wars, for instance, on the movie front, is so good and universal that it will appeal to them. But what do you do if you try to show them all this stuff and they're just like, nah,
they're just
boring.
Into sports.
Yeah, they're into sports.
Where's the football, Dad?
Uncle Josh is going to come around and be like, do you want to watch Man United tonight?
With your bottle of wine and your glass ready to go. I'll just be happy if they're happy, I think. But it's, I think about that. I think about everything. I'm a chronic overthinker. I think about all this stuff in terms of like, I don't want to mold them. I want them to be their own person.
Yeah.
But the first few years, you have to be on them with various things to make sure they get pushed in the right direction. But what if you raise someone, I don't even know if that's chemically possible, for a set of parents who are both duly into something to raise a child who is then anathema to the thing that they were into.
Yeah.
Like, because it's, I'm mostly into some of the stuff that my parents were into.
Well, we're thinking so long term that, at least in my case, like I was into some stuff that my parents were into when I was younger. Robbie Williams, for instance.
He was great.
Loved the album Swing When You Went In. But at a certain age, I think most people, you know, maybe this isn't true, I've got no survey to back it up, but I'd argue that you get to an age where you kind of rebel against what your parents like.
Oh,
and
you want to
find your own stuff. So that will probably end up happening.
I thought of that too, where I was like, I'm pre-aware of that. So I get them into the wrong stuff. So when they rebel against that and get into the stuff they think they're into, that's secretly what I was always into. And then we sync up again.
A 20-year-long con.
Yeah. Really, it's going to have to be.
Scott, our next question is on similar lines from Kuzo, who says, again, in celebration of Scott becoming a dad, who are the best video game dads that can teach you the best about how to be and how not to be a parent? Who are you looking to in the video game space and going, I might take some tips from that guy?
I don't know if you have anyone for this, but for me, the best life lessons in video games aren't necessarily from the dad characters. I love Kratos' journey in 2018 in Ragnarok. But, I mean, if you think about, like, video game dads, it's Joel, it's Kratos. Like, there's not that many, I don't think.
Do you not reckon?
Maybe I'm blanking.
Maybe not exact dads, but I do think we're in an era since The Last of Us and since Bioshock Infinite of at least surrogate father figures. You know what I mean? Like, you've got that relationship between someone and a child, and they might not be directly their father or a parent or a guardian or anything like that, but that familial relationship is kind of at the core of it. Like, God of War, I think, is a perfect example. You know, I think Ragnarok in particular is a great dive into just dads in general, alongside, you know, masculinity and stuff. But you've got Thor on one side, who is this nightmare of a father, and kind of like what Kratos could turn into, and you see the impact that he has on his family and his kid. Like, considering that as a game about, you know, punching Norse gods in the face, I love it when you are going to see Thor at his like lowest, and his kid is just like, oh, Dad, oh, come on, like we've talked about this. Why are you relapsing into these behaviors and stuff? And then you have Thor's relationship with Odin, and why it explains how the way he is. God of War Ragnarok. I almost swore it. Bloody rules, man. I love the story of that
game. We should recommend, or I do recommend, the big long podcast we did. It was like one of our first hour-long podcasts was dissecting everything inside Thor Ragnarok. Thor Ragnarok. Thor, isn't it? And so is Ragnarok. It was God of War Ragnarok. Yeah, I think for me, like, yeah, I love all that stuff. I love conversations on, like, different thoughts or different projections of masculinity over different decades, different generations, I think, being more emotionally available. Like, the idea that that was used to be more of a weakness, that is something that was in my childhood, like, different portrayals of characters in media or whatever. I'm just curious how that feels. How does it feel to impart an idea of masculinity to another, to a fresh canvas? I have no idea what that's going to feel like.
I think it's interesting because as a concept, like, we're so aware of that now, whereas back in the day, I think my dad would never have even been thinking about
it. No,
he's just like, he just gets on with his day and it's just something that happens, whereas now we're like, oh, what does this mean? How do we not be like our fathers or not be like our granddads or the people who came before? Like, what does this even mean in the modern world?
And I don't want to get lost in overthinking stuff. Like, I don't want to do anything wrong, but I feel like I'd be aware of it if I was being too overly aggressive or I wasn't factoring someone else's feelings in or whatever the hell it is. In that regard, but I'm fully aware of that stuff. I think you can go too far, because like, I've done a lot of research. Like, you know, me and my wife have done so much research. She's read so many books, and I don't read, but she's read a lot of stuff. And all of those things, it's like, when they do this, you should say this. When this happens, they're actually thinking this, and this is projecting this, and whatever. And that's fine. I'll try and take that stuff on board, but I don't want someone else bringing my kid up. Like, it has to be
right,
me. So, like, it has to feel genuine and whatever, but you don't want to then make mistakes. I kind of just resigned to the fact that everyone will make mistakes. Like, it's, you're just gonna have to
absolutely right.
roll with it as you go. You have the best intentions and go from there.
You could, the nightmare that I have about someone who is wondering whether he wants kids or not is, like, you could be the best parent in the world and you can do 99.9% of the things perfectly. Mm-hmm. But that 1.1% of things that you do wrong is going to, like, mess your kid up. They're going to be thinking about that to a certain degree. In some regard, I just think, like, everyone I know has something with their parents. You know what I mean? It's almost unavoidable. And I'm not saying that's bad by any means. I mean, like, that's normal. Like you said, you will make some mistakes and it will kind of stay with your kid a bit. Mm-hmm. But you just kind of want to, I think, foster that relationship where you can talk about it. You can reflect. It's not something that is going to drive a wedge between you.
No,
you know
but
what I mean?
It's growth. Like, if you make some mistake and they harbor something for a good few years, few decades, they're going to grow as a person too. They'll figure it out. Maybe you have more conversations. Maybe you get closer over time. Like, there's not any perfect way to do it.
Definitely not.
And like, also, like, the amount of, like, data that is now available on child psychology or parent psychology, partner psychology, like, there's so much stuff there that you can get lost in that clearly it's one big process. Like, accepting you're in that flow is kind of just part of it to me.
Well, I've got one more question about fatherhood before we on to some big questions.
Father
sometimes
good.
Some very silly ones. You touched on it there, and Brian Cole asks, how has Scott been preparing for fatherhood?
Oh, God.
Glad to see you doing so well too, Josh. Thank you, Brian.
Yes, thank you very much as well. I've done everything. I built a nursery. We've got the hospital bags in the car. Read a lot of stuff. We've done some private baby classes with the NHS stuff as well. Basically, the NHS gives you a series of live streams, which I had really, really helpful. And like, you can talk to the person who's hosting it, which is really, really helpful.
PewDiePie.
Yeah, baby. I can't think of a baby celebrity, but some boss baby.
The boss baby
hosting them, and so yeah, the NHS stuff is really cool, but it only goes so far. I wanted to like talk to experts. I wanted to talk to people who like, you know, like midwives and stuff like that. And we got the midwife classes as well, but we ended up paying for a series of like private classes just to do in the city center. So we've been doing them every Wednesday for the last few weeks, and they're with other parents who are like right on the cusp of popping sprogs, or they're weeks behind us. And that's, I just love that whole thing. I love all the new dads talking to each other, all the new mums, everything else, and the conversations that come from that, like the masculinity conversation, like we talked about that. It wasn't like a prompted thing, that there are guidance markers and stuff, but we ended up just talking about like what kind of dads we're going to be and talking about our dads and stuff like that. So I love all that stuff, but in terms of prep at this stage, I'm just waiting.
Again, I guess I don't want to pry too much. You don't even need to open up. It's a podcast about video games.
I bloody will.
But like, has something like this, and when you're talking to other people and you're talking to your family, like, has it made your relationship with your own parents that little bit deeper, or have that extra bit of understanding now you kind of have that parallel? I know, like, you've always been close, but
I was gonna say I'm super close anyway, so it was more just like raw information I didn't know. Like, hey, what was it like on the day that like you needed to go into labor and you need to go to the hospital? What was that like? Finding out those stories are like things that I've had bits and pieces of before, but not fully. But now I'm lucky enough to have like two lovely parents that I love, and like I see them nearly every weekend. We're super close, we talk about everything anyway. And that was one of the things that, like, I kind of fostered over the years as I got older. Me and my dad would just stay up until like 2, 3, 4 in the morning, just talking about life.
Oh, that rules.
As I became like a teenager, because I had more thoughts on life. And then we would start doing that stuff. And we'd, like, you know, the whole thing where you have the whole genre of dad movies, which, shout out to the We Love Dad Movies podcast, you and Patterson. Yeah. But that era of movies, or that sort of type of movie, is something that we would just stick on. Mm. And then, you know, you had Sky, Mission Impossible 2's on again,
yeah,
whatever, put that on. Okay, what's on next? Put that on. You're not even really watching the movie.
Yeah,
it's just on,
yeah, yeah,
but you're just talking about everything. And so thankfully I've got that with my dad now.
That's amazing, man.
So it's cool. I'm looking forward to them being grandparents. Like, it's, that's going to be really fun.
Yeah.
We're already planning like family trips and stuff. So like, yeah.
Oh man. Oh, it's exciting. It's going to be happening.
It's going to be sweet, man.
Very, very soon. Right. We'll pivot now a little bit into talking about this job, actually, because
Ooh.
Ryan Daggers asks, what's
the best name ever?
It's good, isn't it? What's been your favorite piece of work you've ever done? I guess it doesn't have to be from this job.
I always know what this is.
Anything. What is it?
Mine's the Red Dead Redemption 2 is about the death of Rockstar.
Oh, it's great.
Thank you. It's just something that as I was playing through Red Dead 2, I started having a feel for. It's an editorial. It was edited by Osley Beattie, who's over at, I think, Frontier, the game developer now. And I love the way that came out. Like, sometimes you get mastered from an editor who just knows exactly what you're trying to say,
yeah,
and they put the right stuff together. But I'm very proud of that, like, as an opinion piece. I think it only gets more true every year that we see Rockstar do stuff. In terms of the tonality of their games and stuff. So yeah, it's that one video. I think there's other stuff. Like, I'm proud of all this. Like,
yeah,
we have like a following for the podcast, which is insane. People recognize us all the time, which is really, really cool. You never expect it. I'm always honored to matter to anyone outside of my immediate family and everyone. So that's lovely. But I think as an individual thing, my brain served up the Red Dead video.
What about you? I don't know. I was trying to think about this and a few came to mind because, I don't know. I think I took a lot of stuff for granted, to be honest. I think we were doing so much that I never really had the opportunity to stop and kind of reflect and look back. It was only when this question came in, when I was collating them, I started thinking about it. And I was thinking, oh, no, there are a few things. For me, this podcast, I think being here, obviously, What Culture is so much bigger than I. It was already a thing when I joined. So there was nothing really that I was starting, I suppose.
Right.
But when... And I didn't start the podcast, but I was there on the first episode. I really wanted to do it. You know what I mean? I think the first podcast was me, you, and Jules.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, there's a one with me, you, and Ash that's right at the start as well.
Ash might have been on it as well.
I'm pretty sure it's the Red Dead 2
one.
Long
ago. Yeah. Was it that the first one? I thought it was Jules. I can't remember why.
It was that era anyway.
But, if it is you, it was that era. It was absolutely that long time ago. And then kind of like sticking with it in the face of constant roadblocks and potential cancellations of the podcast entirely.
Funnily enough, trying to figure out where podcasts fit as your company pivots towards increased video and
exactly
no audio
that.
Platform is a hell of a thing to navigate when you don't necessarily have that much power in the structure in itself.
Totally. Trying to commit to, you know, audio-only podcasts.
Mm.
Like you said, in a predominantly YouTube and video-based thing and trying to keep them alive.
So should they be video podcasts?
Yeah.
And that doesn't have the retention. And then can we get sponsors? But they don't want to do video sponsors. And then should we do the specific channel just for them?
Exactly.
And then that doesn't make any money. And it's like, oh, God.
There was a period where I think our bosses at the time kind of forgot this podcast existed.
Oh,
it was like, thank God. Don't look at it because it might go away. And now we're here. We've kind of got out. We're in a period now where we have a little bit more control over it and stuff. One thing that I don't talk about enough because I was so worried about it becoming the one story I had to tell. Mm. One of the first big things I did when I joined this company was interview Tommy Wiseau, the director of The Room.
Did I know this?
You must have. It was ages ago. Like, it was one of the first things I did in...
faintest bell.
I don't even think we put it out on the channel. I recorded the audio, and again, it was another thing where it was just... I don't know, wasn't allowed to be put up in YouTube for some reason, but I got to transcribe it and I got to publish it. So that still exists.
What?
And it was about his film, Best Friends, at the time.
Yes.
So it was him and Greg Sestero, who plays Mark in The Room and who I think co-wrote and co-directed that movie.
Mm.
And just like that surreal nature of, I stayed in the office because they were on a different time zone and I was interviewing him at about, I don't know, 10 or 11 at night. And it was like the first big interview I've ever done.
Right.
I'd interviewed one person before and it was just like, a very, very small independent movie director.
And
no one with like the stature of like, or infamy, I guess, as Tommy Wiseau.
Uh-huh.
And I remember waiting for the Skype call to come through, just being terrified. scared back at the wrong questions,
yeah.
Nervous tummy about what they were going to say or think of me. Will he even understand my Geordie
super quick
Jason accent?
That's a thing, a behind the scenes thing. I don't know. I've actually, and I don't mean this in a bragging way, I have lost count of how many interviews I've done at this point, but I've been lucky enough to be able to interview people like Scott Ian from Anthrax, Mark Tremonti, Miles Kennedy from Alterbridge, etc. And the pre-interview energy, I hate it.
It's awful.
I hate waiting to connect. Yeah, I was lucky enough to talk to Ed Boon last year, but in that specific little, it's only a 2 minute, 5 minute window where you give up whatever you were doing, you sit down, the next thing you're doing is talking, but you're waiting to connect, or you're prepping your notes. I despise it.
Me too.
It's the most height of anxiety. I just hate it. Like, and all I want to do is break the ice and talk to the person, but then you get like, you've only got a 10 minute window. So it's just like, get in there, ask you stuff. Hey, are you doing okay? Okay. You don't really care. So whatever. Like, it's just, it's a gross time.
It's someone with a bloody anxiety condition anyway. It only exacerbates it. And it's a funny one, because while it's something I'm the most proud of, especially because it was something that outside of my comfort zone, it was also confirmation that I don't think I want to do that again.
Right.
I don't think I want to do any more interviews. I was big into The Walking Dead at the time, and still am now. And an opportunity came up to, I can't remember who it was, but it was one of the cast members. Mm. I think it might have been the guy who plays Morgan, a character I really like. I'm blanking on his name now, but he's a great actor. Mm-hmm. And the opportunity came up for that, and I thought, I probably should, but I don't want to have to go through that again. It's too nerve-wracking. But the Tommy Wiseau one was a fun time, and I accidentally annoyed him with the very first question, and he wasn't a fan of me after that. And
what was the first question?
It was innocuous, but I think it might have got lost in translation, or maybe I came across wrong, but I asked him essentially, because he'd co-written and co-directed this one, whereas he had, you know, full directorial control over the room. I just asked, like, what was it like, you know, collaborating with someone closely? Like, what was it like giving up that little bit of creative control? And maybe it's because there's a certain reputation attached to him. Maybe he thought I was coming for him and saying, like, you're a control freak. But was just a question.
Yeah, that makes perfect
because
sense.
Because as we've talked about before, like, I'm similar, whereas if I'm collaborating, it's a completely different thing from when you are in charge of the whole thing. So I thought it would be interesting to ask. And he was like, well, first off, I'm not a control freak. And I'm like, I didn't mean it like that, Tommy. I really didn't mean it like that.
Tommy,
I think those two things. And actually, one more. Mm-hmm. And this is another group thing. Not that chatty faces I don't love doing now, and not that I don't love doing it way back when, but I think the first probably six episodes of that show were some of the things that I was the most proud of, because you can like go back and watch those very early episodes and kind of chart that show finding its form.
Oh, yeah.
Like the first one is very different from the second one, which is very different from the third one. You can see the progression of the thumbnails, the kind of the way it's edited by, I think it was Rich at the time, you know, doing these great edits.
Shout out to Rich.
And that kind of evolution of being there while that show kind of found its footing for the first six episodes or so. And then, you know, I still love a bunch of the episodes we've done since, but just that kind of gestation period of everyone collaborating, throwing their ideas in. I really enjoyed that.
I think it's a privilege, and it's lucky enough to be able to say that you were part of something that like had a specific creative chemistry to it. And in the moment, it's not like we thought, and it's not, I'm not holding it up on a pedestal or anything, but they were incredibly fun to put together. But I didn't think of them as something that would end in terms of that era.
Yeah.
And like, obviously the pandemic is what eventually killed it off, because everyone went and did different jobs and everything. But like, to be able to like, we recorded one every week. They had huge views, like 200,000 views a week kind of thing. There was a whole run for like a couple of years solid, or maybe even 3 years solid, where we were all kind of discovering how to even do that format with each other. And then as it was being recorded, someone like Rich or Osley would have an idea for how they were going to edit it, so that it all came out really well. And we would premiere them every Friday, and then we didn't know what their final edit looked like, so we would be in the chat, in the premiere chat, with everybody else. And then that was just really fun. And then like, Rich had something to show off, or Osley had something to show off, and it was just a really phenomenal creative chemistry. And it's just so unique, and it's like, just shout out to every single one of them. Like, it they came together better than we ever thought they would.
Oh, absolutely. We thought maybe that would be a nice experiment to do for a week or two, and then it would get the can and we'd be back to doing lists. But the fact that it manages to stay and have a longevity, and people still say, like, when you're doing the next Chatty Faces now, and even now when we do get back together and we're in the room upstairs and size up, and we've got Joel and we've got Durkin, and we get that sort of like nice collective spirit back, it's like, oh man, I can see why we love doing this every single
Talking about video games,
I've heard it's very good. Something else I was going to say. Oh, geez, yeah. The second episode we ever did, I always remember this. I don't even remember what I talked about, but it was like the most emotional video game of all time.
Right.
But I remember Jules' entry was so emotional that everyone in the room with him, like, we all cried.
It was a game that made you cry or something, and he did that Dragon Cancer, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was something about that energy of, it was the first time I'd done something at this job, which again, very privileged to do, but you know, you get into a routine where it's like, okay, I'm doing all this today, I'm doing that today.
Yeah, yeah.
It is a job, you know what I mean? You kind of,
totally.
Sometimes the creativity, or at least the time to spend making it a passion project, just naturally has to go by the wayside sometimes. But I remember doing that one, and everyone was getting emotional. I don't even know if it translated in the finished version, but being in that room, I just remember thinking, like, oh, this is something.
I remember thinking the same thing.
I'm pleased I'm here for this, you know?
Because we're all hugging each other after we'd recorded our entries and stuff. And we kind of knew going into the subject matter it was going to be like that. But no, I remember thinking the same thing. Yeah. Just like, it's nice. It's ironically nice to do this kind of subject matter with a group of people and then like manage to record something that's like usable on the other side of it.
I think that's another thing to constantly be proud of, is like being in the room while someone else is doing cracking work.
Yeah.
I get to do it 3 times a week with you in this podcast studio. Same. You know what I mean? We've done it in chatty faces in the past.
Oh, man. Sorry, I was just thinking on that regard, I always love, I don't know what the name of the chat he was. It was something where I got to say L.A. Noire was terrible. And I remember Rich filmed you with his phone. I didn't realize that was going to be in the edit. I think in the final edit, it's like me ranting about L.A. Noire, then it cuts to Rich's phone, which looks at you shaking your head, and then back to me and back into the regular edit. And just little things like that were really cool, of like, oh, that is what we look like recording these things.
Yeah.
And just little things like that. It's I'm proud of the run.
Yeah.
The run so far. I'm 11 years in. You're not very far behind me.
No, I suppose, yeah.
We're kinda fleeing.
Be proud you're still doing this, Scott, and you're doing it to such a good level.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Thank you.
I've got one more now about like the work, I suppose, that will be less self-congratulatory. We'll bring ourselves back down to earth now. George asked, and I thought this was really interesting. They asked, has there ever been a time where you have, quote unquote, sold out in your career, and do you regret it? Gaming media, I'm sure it can be tough with walking the fine line of making content slash money about games slash publishers you actually dislike. Now, I think we can both say that we've never said anything that we didn't believe in, you know?
No, I mean, this whole subject matter is hilarious because, what was the thing? I did that video, it was when you were away last year, I did a video called, like, Square Enix is dying or something. If something comes along and I want to talk about it, I just want to talk about it. And, like, thankfully, we don't, other than the podcast sponsors, we don't have any sponsors.
Yeah.
Probably because they see the stuff that we put out and go, we can't.
Well, you're never getting an Ubisoft or a Square Enix game early again.
And they just don't get in touch anymore. But that's the thing, we've never had that in place. And in the past, obviously, we have done sponsored content in the past. Like, we did a Destroy All Humans thing a couple of years ago. But that wouldn't have stopped me calling out THQ Nordic or whatever if something came up. So like that whole echelon I keep using Echelon. I used Echelon in a recording earlier today. That whole wing of journalism or media presentation or coverage or whatever, we're just not built like that. Like, we're not built for anything close to a review-based model where we have to be nice about a publisher because then you might not get a review code, or something close to like the selling out thing or being nice. Just, you don't have to be nice in general. There's obviously a line. We've never just done a hit piece.
No, of course.
The nearest thing to just sort of like talking about something relentlessly negative is probably the state of Suicide Squad right now, but that just keeps serving stuff up to talk about. So it's like, well, why wouldn't you? Yeah, to me, it's like, yeah, I can easily reimburse everything I've ever said.
Yeah.
And then like, if it's the only thing that's changed are like opinions as you play more of a game or something.
That's it. Like, obviously opinions change, but at least in the moment, I know I would have kind of believed whatever I was saying. Like you said, I think we're quite, not even lucky, because I'm not even saying that like the mainstream media outlets who rely on reviews are, you know, doing anything to please the publishers. I don't even think that happens. Certainly don't get, at least now, like paid off to do good reviews. I think that's just something that people like
that was never like
comments.
A one-to-one anyway. No. Like it was the nearest that got was like, okay, your website has adverts for a particular game from a particular publisher. That publisher might then be a bit more cagey with you, not us, but in scenarios circa 2014, 2015, or in general, a bit more cagey with you over the emails. They might not guarantee you a code to something. They might wait until launch day. Your review coverage is then like hobbled by that.
I
think I thought about it in a podcast from years ago. I had that with Bethesda back when Elder Scrolls Online launched. And that was before we had the video side of things, but it was Elder Scrolls Online at launch was a complete tire fire. Mm. And I remember referring to that in a different list for something else and just saying, it was like an aside, like, oh, it can't be more broken than Elder Scrolls Online. And I think at the time they were scouting us for a potential sponsorship, probably for Elder Scrolls Online. And then whoever was scouting us had found that line and they got in touch and were like, why are you saying this? And like, how dare you, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I, at the time, just said, well, I remember linking them to reports of the game being offline, being like, well, I'm factually correct.
Yeah,
so
I mean, it's not like, wait, this is in bad faith.
No. And then, funnily enough, someone else replied from Bethesda at the time, or the PR that they were using anyway, and said, that person was an intern. They just kind of bit a bit too fast. Like, we're obviously teaching people to try and massage messaging, or whatever it is. I'm assuming that's the side of it. So that was one thing where I was like, oh, this could have gone a different way.
Yeah, I think, like you said, we're lucky that YouTube side of things, like the bread and butter's lists, so we don't rely on like breaking news coverage. Like game review style coverage. Yeah. We obviously cover the news, but
it's cool to get on stuff if it's available. Yeah. We're not on people's lists.
No, no.
Like, I totally get the brass tacks reality of if you're a PR company and you've been hired by Ubisoft, you've been hired by Bethesda, you're gonna get the IGNs, whoever else is even out there. It's not us.
No, it's not even something that, like, I'm resentful for. I'm like, you know what? Fair enough. Like, that totally makes sense. Anyway, I said this question wasn't going to be entirely patting myself on the back, Scott Tailford. And I will say there have, at least for me personally, been a lot of lessons to be learned since we started doing the adverts for the podcast.
Right.
I remember when we first started doing it, we got a opportunity to do one in collaboration with EA and Battlefield 2042.
Yes.
And that was something I genuinely jumped at the chance to do because I thought, I'm a huge fan of this franchise. Same. I think this game looks incredible. This is something I'm happy to put my name to and kind of like go with it. And then I did the advert and then the game obviously came out and it was a little bit disappointing, wasn't it? It had a lot of problems.
It's on
and
fire.
We did a video on how it was disappointing. And I still liked that game at the time for what it was, but I can see that it had a lot of disappointing things in it. And we did a video on it, but then for me, it was embarrassing for myself because we did that video, but the me saying like, hey, the new Battlefield's out on the podcast was up until like a month after it came out.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, right, okay, I have to think about this way more. Just because it's a franchise that I trust doesn't mean that I should go in
honestly,
on that degree anymore. And it kind of blew up in my face then, and I've been more wary about it that since.
I'm very, very cut and dry with where the boundaries are between these things. Like, if you hear me doing a podcast advert, that is a podcast advert. If you hear me reviewing a video game, I'm reviewing a video game. Yeah, like, to me, those boundaries are extremely clear.
For me, it's like, if you hear me do a a podcast sponsor on this podcast. Like, it is always something that I like or have, I'm familiar with. Mm. Like, genuinely, the stuff that I've done it for, what comes to mind is HelloFresh. I used HelloFresh before we ever got an opportunity. Manscaped, I didn't use, but now I use all the time. I'm wearing Manscaped pants right now and we're not sponsored. Genuinely love that product.
I will super quickly...
Even like EE Game Store, like my provider has always been EE, so I'm kind of comfortable doing that. And I think, again, because we're such a big team, we have the opportunity to kind of pick and choose in that regard. Mm. Like, I know if something came in that I didn't want to do, I wouldn't have to do it. Mm. And that is a very, again, sort of like privileged
thing
to be able to just say, no, I'm not feeling it. I don't really believe in it.
And I'll say, like, I'm not endorsing stuff I don't like at all. Like, we knock stuff back. Oh my God, the NFT era.
Oh,
we knocked so much stuff back. I was like, I'm not endorsing this at all. Like, it's degrees of comfort, I guess, in regards to it being an advert on the channel. And it's not like that. That's the perfect scenario. Like, you get a set of sponsors that you actually do care about. And the thing is, on the sponsored side, I was massively proud when we were sponsored by God of War Ragnarok. Not because, like, I mean, I've had various thoughts on the game. The podcasts are out there. But the fact that we were noticed and on Sony's radar where they were like, oh, we want PlayStation adverts. And there's a wider conversation about them being complacent, that you're like a wing of their marketing tool. But as a personal thing, I was like, oh, but that's cool.
Yeah.
I've heard of the sponsor. It's not just some random tiny thing that we used to get 5-6 years ago.
Scott Telford, moving on from the sponsors.
Yes.
I've got a question here from George Jackson, who says, hello, lads. In terms of movies, now Marvel seems relatively dead in terms of popularity and IP is suffering from fatigue. Mm-hmm. What's the best original movie you've seen recently? Past Lives and Oppenheimer and Killers of the Flower Moon were my three favorites from last year. Before you answer, I'm just going to say those three are bangers.
Yes.
I loved all of those. Seeing Killers of the Flower Moon in the cinema was one of the best experiences I had last year, and Past Lives blew me away.
I have a horrific memory, especially at this point in life where I keep forgetting everything. But it depends how new they want to be, because I'm watching a lot of anime at the minute, and I feel what kicked it off. Every now and then I'll just watch Akira again, because it's just one of my favorite films. I think it's absolutely flawless, and I always get something else out of it when I go back to it. And then that, I watched last year a movie, Suzume is what I'm going to shout out, which is a brand new movie, but it's by a dude called Makoto Shinkai, who just has this eye for, like, living in Japan, like, just the small details, the things that you notice when you're a tourist somewhere, when you're in a city space, the feeling of a bustling city. Like, the first time I was lucky enough to experience Japan last year and walk through Tokyo, Osaka, and Kyoto, and the feeling of Tokyo when we first came out the steps, and you just see the rush of all the signage, and like everything, skyscrapers are like twice as high as anything in where we're from.
Yeah,
it was beautiful. And Shinkai's approach to his eye for what it's like living in Japan, there's something about it that's just so emotionally uplifting, or just, it's like I'm there again. And it's just the most beautiful stuff I've ever seen. Suzume is what I'd shout out. It's spelled Suzume. Came out last year. But also his work that I'm now working my way through, a movie called Your Name is awesome, from 2016, I think. And just, Shinkai's work just seems to be held up at the minute as like this big deal in anime.
Yeah.
And so I'd say Suzume. And just in general, I'm absolutely loving just his approach to portraying life in Japan.
That's it. I hadn't heard of that one, but all of my pals have been recommending Your Name since it came out.
Yeah.
So that's been on my radar for a while. Never committed, but you've kind of just sold it to me there.
You might, Your Name's beautiful, but I think I preferred Suzume.
Oh, okay. Mainly,
Suzume is just kind of like about, like a post-nuclear Japan, like just sort of dealing with like rebuilding and all that kind of stuff, and like the attitudes across Japan. And I think that has a bit more of a message to it.
Mm.
Whereas like Your Name is almost like it's like a mystery romance narrative.
Right.
Which is cool. Like it's so supremely well done. But I got a bit more out of the thematics of Suzume.
Class, man. I honestly, the three that were mentioned, it sounds like a cop-out answer, are some of my favorites from last year. I loved The Zone of Interest.
I still haven't seen that.
Catching up on the Oscar films, I think it's, honestly, in terms of the Best Picture category, it's maybe the strongest year I've ever lived through. Every single one I watched,
maybe.
I really, really enjoyed.
I'd back that, yeah.
The only one I wasn't too asked about was Maestro, but even then it was a fun enough watch.
I build on Maestro, but I loved Past Lives. Poor Things was beautiful, but in terms of the way it was shot, but I didn't really care. I didn't really care when it finished. I was quite glad it was done.
Right.
But,
I was a big fan of Poor Things.
Yeah, I appreciate what it was going for, but I don't know. It felt like it was really expansive, and then towards the end, its message was just very straightforward. And
I
was like,
get that, yeah, sure. 100%.
Anatomy of a Fall, I absolutely adored, though.
Oh, Anatomy of a Fall.
Yeah.
That was another one of those, like, top cinema going experiences of last year, watching mm-hmm. that all the way through. Oh man,
I can't. Incredible. I'm trying to log into my letterbox as we're talking. I can't get on there. But like
you
I said,
loved Dune 2, didn't you?
I did not love Dune 2. That thing sucks. But Dune's really boring. But I can't think of the rest of the stuff that I've watched. So I will hang my entire thing on either Suzume / Makoto Shinkai's work, or if it's something that I've watched that's new but it's actually old, I'll shout out Perfect Blue, which is a murder mystery dissection of what it means to be a celebrity type anime movie from like the mid 90s.
We had a question later on from your friend of mine, James Piat, right? Who was asking for our favorite anime / mangas and
right.
stuff. And the Demon one Slayer, I was going to bring up, I'm not, you know me, I'm very unfamiliar with that area of art, mm-hmm. but Perfect Blue is one that I've also seen. And
oh, you've seen Perfect Blue?
Yeah, I want to watch it again. I watched it a few years ago. Again, another one recommended by my friends who were into that stuff. And they were like, watch Perfect Blue. I think you'll enjoy it.
Oh,
I did.
Mate.
I was like, holy hell. I was not expecting this.
I love how dark Perfect Blue is. I kind of wanted it to end a little bit earlier when it's even darker, because the very end is a positive note. And I quite liked how absolutely... like bottomed out it was towards the end.
Yeah.
But I think it can, because obviously it was made in the 90s, so it's a different comment on celebrity that was more referencing the time. Whereas now, I don't know, I feel like you could do almost like a more tragic end to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, either way, Perfect Blue is awesome.
My answer for the question of like, what's my favorite movie I've seen recently is, it links to the next question we got from Chris Smallsy12, who says, what was the last movie that made you cry / tear up? Mine was Guardians of the Galaxy 3. And the last movie I properly bawled my eyes out at and that I adore is... my favorite movie from the last few years is After Sun, which I know I have told
you to
watch.
I need to watch that. You told me it was quite like a depressing
over
thing.
And over again. Truly depressing, but one of the most empathetic movies I think I've ever seen. You know, we were talking about fatherhood a lot at the start of this, and the things this has to say about that relationship between a child and their parent, but specifically, I guess, a father in this, because it's kind of about that like old school, like masculine sort of trope of suppressing your kind of failings, I suppose. Hiding.
Humanity, I would have said.
He's got he's like a mentally ill guy. Mm. He's like very depressed, but he's not getting the help. And he's like, it's a sort of period piece. I think it's set in either the early 2000s or the early 90s. And he's kind of trying to shield his daughter away from his issues while at the same time not realizing like the effect that's kind of having on her. It's about them being away on holiday. It is honestly one of the most moving things I've ever seen. I went to see in the pictures. Me and my girlfriend, man, we came out afterwards and I was crying during it, and I kind of, you know, got myself together afterwards, and we were in the lobby, and she was like, give me a minute. And then she burst out crying. So I gave her a cuddle and I burst out crying. And I've seen it a couple times since, man. It just never fails. Paul Mescal is the lead of it, and he's just... he does so much with so little. It's like a slow film, but it's one of those where in the moment you might be thinking, oh, it's not really hitting me. But when you get to the end and you get the culmination of everything, it just, oh man, it hit me like a truck.
Certain like thematic, because the thing is, like overall, I've kind of, this is a weird phrase, but I've just got out of movies overall. Mm. They're not doing it for me as a medium that much anymore. But then every now and then, at the minute, I'm watching lots of stuff because I'm just sort of... I tried to do a whole thing where I was trying to drive a wedge into my game calendar, because I was like, I'm finished Dragon's Dogma 2. I finished Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I really hate Rise of the Ronin, so I'm done with that game. But I'm done for now. And so, like, I'll play Stellar Blade, and that kind of feels like the rest of the year is kind of done.
Yeah.
So I, like, wanted to, like, free as much space up as possible, which got me back into movies because they're less time-intensive. And I've been getting through them. But in terms of, like... something that made me cry, I can't think of anything really. I mean, I'm a big baller at movies, but like, not much has grabbed me recently. But thematically, like certain things for After Sun, like certain elements of a movie will just get me anyway. If it's like, if it's an old person struggling, reminds me of like when I was a kid. I was raised by my grandparents a lot, so if it's like an old person just trying to get by, that'll get me in a way. Or anything to do with animals or whatever, like there's certain thematics will get me. But I don't have anyone off the top of my head. I was going back through my letterbox, and so little I've banked on letterbox is the Super Mario Brothers movie is like one of the most recent things on there.
Of course.
And, I thought there's bits of Godzilla Minus One that were very hard hitting.
I'm really excited to watch that, actually.
Have you not seen it?
Nah, I missed it in cinemas. And I'm waiting. I might be on VOD now, but as soon as it drops, I'm going to give it a go. I know. Never been a big Godzilla guy, but like the buzz around that made me want to grab hold.
Minus One.
See what the crack is about.
Minus One's phenomenal. Also, Shin Godzilla. Like, there's two strands to Godzilla. You've got Goofy doing the dropkicks, suplexing Kong Godzilla. Yep. Not bothered about him, although he's big fun. And gut-wrenching comments on Japan rebuilding itself after World War II Godzilla.
Yes.
Which is like the original Shin Godzilla and the new one. And oh my God, watch Minus One and watch Shin.
I will. Maybe not Shin.
Oh, Shin's so good.
If Minus One convinces me, I will definitely.
Shin, I mean, I'm going to go on about it now, but
yeah,
Shin
on,
is about the governmental response to Godzilla. There's no main character in Shin. Mm. You kind of just follow different wings of the government as they try to contain the message. Nice. And it's kind of about like Japan's pride and like, can we admit that we actually need help? And like trying to go through it. And it's like that idea of like, I mean, it'll mean a lot more to people who are actually from Japan, obviously. But in terms of like a cultural assumption of the decorum and the honor and the general way that Japan holds itself, which I love about that country, but when that's fractured, how do they deal with that? And like having to admit it kind of thing. And it's like, I love Shin Godzilla, man. That's what a movie.
Better than Godzilla versus Kong then.
Pivoting
into something moving
Kong
less heavily. You got very good,
very good.
Pivoting into something a bit less heavy. Yes. KB asks, how many holes does a normal straw have? 1, 2, or none? I'm saying none, right? Because if you put a hole in a straw, it doesn't work. You know what I mean? You've messed up.
He means a factory ready straw.
No, I know. But what I mean is, if you would say it in like a sentence, yes. If you say, "Oh no, I've got a hole in my straw,"
true.
It implies that it's broken.
No, but every straw has a hole in it. That's what makes it a straw.
It does. But how many? One or two?
One. Just one.
I would agree. If I had to like live in the reality where it has a hole, it's got one hole. You know what I mean?
I would say it has one. I get the whole perception, like if you spin it around, is that two holes? And it depends on your, I don't know, perception of reality, but it's one. It's one. Tunnel? Does one tunnel have...
That's exactly it.
Does one tunnel have two holes?
A tunnel does, but it's got a different function to a straw.
That's true,
If you say a straw has two holes, right,
yes,
and you block one off, it's no longer a straw. It doesn't work.
Well, it has a hole, you've just blocked it. To complete that sentence, you had to block a hole.
God,
therefore, there are two.
You did as well.
Yeah, there's two holes.
Now there's none.
Done.
None at all. HB Bumcraft says, hello, legends. I like to pair my adult beverages to my video games, such as drinking sake while playing Yakuza /Like a Dragon. Do you have any specific food or drink pairings for games?
I used to do the big Call of Duty love-in every year, which I didn't do when Modern Warfare 3 came out because it reviewed so badly and you were like, it's not worth it,
yeah,
or whatever. But I always loved either doing takeout food, but mainly a ton of donuts, a big tray of Krispy Kremes on Call of Duty launch weekend. I'll do the Doritos. I'll not do Monster Energy because I'm not too much of a fan, but I'll do the Pepsi Max. I'll do the snack foods. I'll get some donuts in. I'll do the big stupid slobbery weekend that they want us to do.
Yes.
And I'll get the double XP and I'll do all that BS. And I didn't do it last year, but I had been doing that every year for a long time.
Oh man, I never do it for games, and we've talked about it before that I don't want my hands to be grubby while I'm touching the controller.
Oh no, don't play it at the same time.
No.
Oh, I'll tell you a life hack. Get a pack of lemon wipes. Bring them in the living room.
Lemon wipes?
Yeah.
Oh, but then
you don't find lemon wipes?
Well, my hands smell like lemon.
That's a nice smell. They also don't smell too much like lemon, but you get different ones. But those like those wet wipes,
yeah,
that's a life hack for me because I'm not going to go back and forward to the kitchen.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not a huge lemon guy. I don't like putting lemon on my fish and chips either. It's not for me.
I can go back and forward, but in terms of a cleanliness.
Smell,
it's all right, yeah.
It reminds me of the grub. Yeah, but something's already gone wrong, I think, if I'm eating with it, because I just don't...
Well, you're going to be getting hands-on with the snacks, aren't you?
No, but the thing is, it's like I do this a lot with movies and television,
right.
But that's because I can sit back and sort of relax. So when I was watching Mad Men, had a few whiskeys and stuff while watching it, made a few Italian sandwiches while I was watching The Sopranos.
I remember getting into White Russians after watching Big Lebowski.
Exactly.
I bought a dressing gown and everything.
I'm going back through Twin Peaks at the moment, and last night we did the season 2 finale, so we got donuts and coffee and what have you to pair it with that.
Oh, that rules.
The one time I tried to do it with a game was Monster Energy with Death Stranding's PS5 edition.
Okay.
But the issue with that, Scott Tilford, is they took the branding out of that version. So he wasn't even drinking Monster in it. So I felt betrayed because I'd got it all in to match it up with Sam Bridges.
Mm-hmm.
And they took the Monster out of it. And I thought, wait, now I'm just drinking Monster.
Yeah. I remember trying to get into Monster because it is on everything. Like that logo is everywhere. And I love UFC, but I don't watch it that much. But like I used to watch more of it. And I remember the Monster Energy logo being everywhere. And I was like, this is the cool beverage.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
You try it and it's like, oh.
I do like the Monster. I don't get it often. Very rare that I get a regular Monster. But I like the Monster. It's like a lemonade version.
Mm.
It's like a summer one. Very good when it's warm.
I don't even know the different ones. I had the green can. I gather there's Monster aficionados out there going, lads, there's like 20 of them, but I don't know.
The only reason I ever drink energy drinks, and you know this, is because I don't like cold coffee. So when everyone's on the iced coffee craze in the summer, I need to go get an energy drink.
I want to make you a really good iced coffee.
Well, the issue is I don't like the taste of coffee. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you got a weird thing with it.
Yeah, I like the milk.
Just drink milk.
It tastes like I had a coffee last night coffee, and I know this is probably how it's supposed to
taste. You drink coffee every day.
Yeah, I know. But it's got loads of caramel in it. It's got loads of syrup. And it just, it hides it better when it's hot. When it's cold, I'm thinking, why would I drink this over any other cold drink in existence?
Well, no, you can do the thing you just said there about like masking the taste or whatever. You do that with iced coffee as well. It's the same thing.
It punctures in a different way. It's kind of like, I love the taste of hot tea, but I don't like cold teas either because...
No, but cold tea's not a thing.
Eh? Why it is? Iced tea?
Well, I guess like I was thinking tea that's like gone cold, but like, yeah, I don't know.
No?
I don't know. I feel like you're missing out on a whole world of deliciousness.
I absolutely am. It tastes of cigarettes to me. It tastes exactly like cigarettes.
Regular hot coffee does more for me.
What? No, what do you mean?
That's what I'm there for, really.
I mean, it tastes like it. Like, I'm like, you know, it just has the similar odor, the smokiness in it. It puts me right off. Not that I even smoke, but you know.
Me neither, but it's a vibe.
That's all I have to say about that. We've got a big question here from Draven Hartman, who says, hello from Michigan. Mm-hmm. I had a few questions for you guys that I've been excited to ask. First, I loved hearing you guys talk about how exciting the current Bloodline story is in WWE. But if you guys had to pick a match from any era or brand, what is your favorite wrestling match? They've got a second part.
My favorite one ever.
Yeah.
We were just talking about this at lunchtime, but I'm actually going to shout out the Hangman Page versus Swerve Strickland match. I forget which pay-per-view they fought at, but it's the one where Hangman Page actually did drink Swerve's blood.
Right.
And then spat it all over the sky. Mm. And it was the single coolest thing I've ever seen.
I think my favorite wrestling match ever is Ric Flair's retirement match. Because he's a terrible guy, and it's the most embarrassing thing you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah.
It's the only wrestling match I've watched in 7 years, and it's like, oh, no. It's a complete train wreck from start to finish.
I could go. I tell you what. Can I get on this little... I started making like a list of all the best matches that I've watched this year so far. And I thought I want to shout out Sting's retirement. That was the recent thing.
I want to watch that, yeah.
Sting and Darby versus the Young Bucks. AEW was awesome. I also would say Eddie Kingston against Bryan Danielson. That was at Revolution, 3rd of March, if you want a specific date.
There we go.
And also, there was a really cool one, Ospreay versus Takeshita. That was also at Revolution. It's Will Ospreay versus Konosuke Takeshita. Just, they'd never worked with each other before, and you would never know it. They were phenomenal together. Like, just two of the best wrestlers in the world, on the earth right now.
I love that you genuinely didn't know that question was coming, yet you had a bullet-pointed list of dates and times and everything.
I never did it before, but I was always like, every week I'm watching wrestling. I was going to say this stupid shuffling joke. I'm not going to. And I'm watching so much wrestling, I was like, I might as well start making a diary of the ones that stand out. So I started doing that. Then I forgot about it, and I've missed 2 weeks, but I've got the ones before then.
I can't remember them in particular because it's been so long since I watched wrestling, but I used to have the videotape of WWF TLC matches.
Nice.
That's kind of how I got into wrestling, you know, watching Edge and Christian and the Hardy Boys and the Dudley Boys as well, just getting into those matches. But I wouldn't know how you would even find that these days. The second half, unless you got something else.
No, I was going to go on and on about TLC matches. Carry on.
The second half of Draven's question is, and also, it was super cool hearing you guys shout out Hot Mulligan. They're my favorite band and are from only 30 minutes away from me. What is your guys' favorite song by them? And do you guys have any local bands from your area that you would suggest? I'm into lots of different genres, so any kind is welcome. Congrats to Scott on becoming a dad, I wish you all the best.
So Hot Mulligan's your band. I know them because you have them on. I couldn't tell you. I'm going on them on Spotify.
Yeah, go on.
I love Equipped Sunglasses, which is their number one song. But other than that, I just like that album.
I think my favorite one is, it's the second track of their newest album. I'm going to get it up right now. It's called It's a Family Movie, She Hates Her Dad. I really like that. It's got a great hooky chorus. But in terms of local bands, there's a couple that comes to mind for me. One is a band called Martha. If you Google Martha DIY, they'll come up. Mm-hmm. Their biggest hit is Ice Cream and Sunscreen. They're very local to us. Not on the level of a Green Day or anything like that, but definitely worth listening to. I was actually listening to their most recent album on the way into work today. They are excellent. There is a punk album, band nearby called Mouses. They've only got one album out so far, but they're incredible.
Right.
And I guess the biggest one from this area is Sam Fender, probably.
Yeah.
Who I can take or leave it sometimes, but 17 Going Under is like one of the best songs of the last 10 years.
Yeah, man. What's... Oh, God, I've not listened to that Fender album in a while. What's the one that has Stephen Graham in the video?
Oh, yeah.
The one that's all about his dad and that.
About his dad. That's the theme.
That video gets me.
What is that called?
That whole kind of portrayal of that relationship and like that whole video gets me. I can't think what that song's called. But yeah, I never think about where bands are from. I think it's because 9 times out of 10, it's just like a Spotify playlist or whatever. But there is a... Absolutely, I almost swore they're effing cool synth band called Pensacola Mist that are from like the Northeast or whatever. I was trying to find a specific place in the Northeast, but I know that they're from the Northeast of England. And just some of the best vocally driven synthwave that you can find. Just beautiful vibes. Like, I was amazed that they were from around here.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought they were called Pepsi Cola Mist, but it's Pensacola, P-E-N-S-A-C-O-L-A Mist.
Nice, man. It's called Spit of You, that song you were talking about.
Dude.
I mean, you put Stephen Graham in anything and I will cry.
Dude doesn't miss.
He's the best.
He never missed.
Absolute best. Right, we've got a couple more before we end this part of the episode. And these are centered around life. Might as well finish this with life.
I do like
we
life.
Started with life. And this is from Jana Tiri. So sorry if I got your name pronunciation wrong there. I'm going to do that to everyone throughout this entire two-part series. Who asks, your favorite routines in your daily lives could be anything. And Harry Paulett asks, what are your unexpected tips for good life/mental health? Hope you're both doing good. So essentially, anything small, like what's your favorite routine in the day or the week or whatever?
The routine stuff, I as me and you say all the time when we're in between recordings, we're horrendous at planning anything because we are way too improvisational and impulsive and be like, we should talk about this. Oh, actually, this, we should talk about this thing. And then we should record this. And then we should take that, whatever. So I don't necessarily, I can't think of too many routines. I'm weird. As I grew up, I kind of hated routines. I didn't like the idea that every week I would do the same thing at all. Because I just didn't like that feeling. I didn't like that my life would have that much of a structure to it. And I just wanted to be more improvisational. There are things that repeat. Like I used to swim 2 times a week, and that would be like a Tuesday and a Friday. And I did that for like 2 years or whatever, the last couple of years. But I don't really have too many like daily routines.
That's interesting.
I'll routine stuff and I'll talk about like general well-being.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like I have many routines.
Kind of the opposite. I think I realized during university especially that I need a solid routine. Mm. Otherwise, I just lose my mind a little bit. I like knowing that I've got this to do here.
Right.
Keeps me on track, keeps me focused a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I treat myself to some routines during the week. I'm bad at keeping a daily one.
Right.
But every Sunday, I like to go down to the market at Newcastle and get... food from this place called, I think it's Fat Panda Bing. It's sensational.
That's a sick name.
A Chinese wrap you can get from there. It's a lovely breakfast meal. So I treat myself to that on Sundays. Again, down the quayside, there's like this little pier, like dilapidated pier.
Hmm.
And I like having a walk down to there just to have a look at it.
Right.
Helps clear the old mind.
Uh-huh.
And honestly, I never feel better than when I've done my skincare on a morning.
Right, okay.
If I do like my full skincare routine, I feel like I've set myself up well for the day. If I'm just rolling out of bed and going straight to work, I feel like there's something not clicking.
Oh, mine's like, anything to do with that where it's like cleaning of the house, cleaning of a room or whatever. I'll do that when I'm ready.
Right.
Like, I don't like it's the first thing I have to do. I'm like, no, I want to do a few levels of this. I'm going to do 2 hours of this story. I'll get there. I'll do it in a bit. I remember there was something, I don't know what the specific game was, but me and you were talking about something like of an evening and you were saying, I can't do that. I've got to clean the flat.
Yes.
And I would have been like, nah, game, do the game thing and clean. I'll always do it later. And my wife's always like, later when? When's later, Scott? And I'm just like, but give me a minute. And then if you give me the time, I'll get there. Like if it's a Friday night, then I'll do the stuff on like a Saturday evening or something or whatever it is. I always prioritize myself all the time.
I totally get that. You know, absolutely a good way to live if that makes
Hoovering's
you
Hoovering's not the boss of me.
Well, it's interesting that you say that because going off Harry's question, which was, you know, unexpected tips for a good life, good mental health. I hope you're doing okay, Josh. Mm. One, if I had any tips for good mental health, like, please give me them. I want them. I don't have any to give.
I am the receptacle.
But I only know that for me. It is that thing of being tidy. If I do that first, again, I kind of feel like my life's together for that day.
It's true.
If I put it off and go straight to a game, part of me's thinking, oh, well, I haven't done this, I haven't done that, and I can't enjoy it in the same way, but that's just the way I'm wired, and I guess people are the exact opposite.
Not necessarily. I will say, like, yeah, I'm not going to let something get too gross. I hate food mess. So, like, there's a certain level of that where I'm like, oh, I'll put this thing off or whatever, but I'm not putting it off to a degree where it's that noticeable.
Yeah.
It's just, like, the little things you know need doing. Like I said, I'll always prioritize myself. For me, the mental health stuff, like, you got to prioritize yourself. One of the things that I completely lost my way with in the run-up to having a kid is being able to prioritize myself. Because it was just thinking about kids stuff, attending classes, trying to sort all this work stuff out, like trying to make sure that the section's going to be okay without me, kind of stuff like that. It was every waking moment of every day for a solid month. And I had the point where I went to see a GP, I went to see a doctor, because I did have sharp pains over my heart, which were a very bad feeling. And thankfully, quote unquote, it was just like adrenaline spiking for a few days in a row where the GP was like, you're okay. But at the same time, like, since then, that was only a few weeks ago, I did sort of take more of a step back or meet things out and prioritize yourself. Like, take a minute to maybe go to the pub by yourself and get some food or something, yeah. Or like go for a walk by yourself or whatever. But like, to me, the main thing for the mental health stuff, I feel really bad when my diet's bad. And I know that's fundamentally linked on it, because I love getting more analytical about like mental health, like because it is such an unknown and you can spiral, and I do it all the time. The more you can give me specifics and be like, oh, it's because your blood sugar is low. Oh, it's because your brain's producing too much of this chemical. And if we give you this, it'll rebalance it. I'm like, sick, give me that. Like figure me out. Give me the, because we're just a machine. Like, give me the thing. And so like, I like that side of it. So like, I would feel really bad if I've had like too much fast food, too much takeout, too much bad fatty stuff in a row. I feel like it sits on me and I don't have the energy. I don't wake up refreshed. I don't wake up ready to go. Whereas like, if I've had the fruits, the salads, I'm walking, I'm swimming, like I can tackle each day better. I wake up ready to go in a way that I just don't if I've had bad food.
I totally get that, man. Like, I have a very complicated relationship with food where it's like, that's always the dream.
Right.
And then I just, my brain goes, nah, it's just easy to do this. It's easy to get back into the thing. And it's, I always want to get there. Mm. I always want to be able to think about it and then do it in that way. Mm. I think you mentioned something really important there about like taking yourself out to places. You know, totally. I think it's not exactly a hidden life tip or anything like that, but something that I really value is being able to do stuff on my own. Like, I love going to the cinema on my own.
I love independence.
Love going to gigs on my own. Love going to eat on my own. Like, if you want to go with people, obviously that is amazing, yeah. But don't feel like, I guess my one tip, and I don't have many of them, is to like, don't feel like you need someone else to do the stuff you love. You can do them all on your own. Yeah. And trust me, you'll have a great time 9 times out of 10.
If there's one lie or one misconception that like 90s media, early 2000s media taught you, it's that you need to go to the cinema as a group.
Yeah.
You need to like do everything as a group. Like, there was no prioritizing the individual back then, because it wasn't cool. And you know, the loser by himself, like whatever, like go to a pub by yourself, get like waited on to a degree, get some lovely food, prioritize yourself. It's lush. Use their free Wi-Fi to go online. It's a little afternoon.
It really is, man. That cinema one especially. Mm. I see people online getting caught up about, oh, people might look at me. No one cares. Like, I know it's a difficult mental hurdle to get over. Like, my girlfriend just recently did it for the first time as well. I understand that. But once you do it once, it'll unlock hopefully a whole new world.
Oh, go to the cinema by yourself. Like, I used to have that as a little treat, because I swapped my Wednesday for a Saturday. I work Saturdays and take Wednesdays off. And so on, I went, because I love being off during the week. Everyone else is at work. It's hilarious. I love it. And going to the cinema by myself, cinema's most empty. I can go like somewhere like the Odeon and get like the fried chicken bits and the nachos, and I can just have a feast to myself and watch a movie.
My favorite treat day is taking a morning or a day off work, going to the cinema at about 11 or 12 in the morning, and just having that freedom to be on my own. There's about 5 other people on the screen, and there's no screaming kids, no one running around, no one on their phones, and I'm watching like Spider-Man No Way Home and having a great time. Scott Tilford.
You said Man and Web wrong there.
Hey, man, watched Man and Web the other night. That was amazing. We're going to round out this first episode with a question specifically for you. This is from Mark Langley, who says, hey, I was once stood in front of Scott at an Alter Bridge gig.
Get in.
He was with his partner, so I didn't bother him, and wondered which is his / your favorite Alter Bridge album. Blackbird holds a special place in my heart, so won't be top despite very strong efforts. Also, Tremonti fan. And James Snipe also says, question for Scott, what is your favourite Alter Bridge album?
I almost reflexively went, F yeah, when they said I'm a Tremonti. I love Tremonti. I just stopped myself getting tattoos. Mark Tremonti, the best guitarist on the planet. The Tremonti album's absolutely phenomenal. Just really good hard rock stuff. All the riffs, all the song compositions. I adore Tremonti. Firstly, anyone who ever sees me, come say hi. Like, if you want to, that's lovely. I'm happy to talk to anybody. sometimes too much and they can't get away. But for Alter, each album has its benefits. I think AB3 is massively overlooked, and that's the big concept album. It's the one that singer Miles Kennedy did when he got diagnosed with tinnitus, and he was like, "Oh, is my singing is everything over because I can't, I can't hear as well," and that the whole thing. And then coming back out of that, AB3 is just this great. It's the only concept album they have, but this great concept album about like a lost soul finding their way back, and it's like super abstract, but the compositions are so good. And Words Darker Than Their Wings is like maybe their single biggest masterpiece. Just this great bit where like Miles Kennedy, the singer as an individual, is more atheistic or agnostic. Mark Tremonti is more of a believer, and their whole song is just a conversation between a believer and a non-believer. And then the chorus is just like, well, neither of us really know, but we'll only find out at the end. And I just love that. I think it's such a beautifully put together song. It's instrumentally incredibly complex and like so hard to play, but it's really cool. So that's AB3. I think I'd go Fortress. This is such an indulgent topic.
No, this is the point. It's more or less a Scott Tilford podcast. This, we start on fatherhood, end on Alter Bridge, your two big pillars.
I know, my other children. Fortress is like their masterpiece as an album. I love AB3, but Fortress is like the big meaty thing. It's the one AB3 is the album that took them into arenas, because that album has the song Isolation on it, which was the first one that was in the charts for like 3 months solid. Whatever. Fortress, though, is them at the absolute apex of everything. Yeah. Like, just some of the most incredible vocal takes on Miles's part, incredible riffs, etc. And Fortress, if you've not heard Alter Bridge, if your only association with Alter Bridge is Metalingus, because that was Edge's theme song.
I was just about to say, I have never heard... I've never listened to Alter Bridge, sorry, but right. I know they did Edge's theme song, which rocks.
Yes.
So maybe they're the best band ever.
That's true, but also that's one of their worst songs.
Nah, I can't believe
that.
In
the grand scheme of things, they did so much better than that song. I like Metalingus, it's fine, but they are exponentially orders of magnitude above that. Like, I can't sing that band's praises enough, but anyone who's into remotely rocky stuff, stick Fortress on and just bask in that album.
We'd be listening to that a lot while you're off, eh?
I guess
going
so.
Back to it.
I'm thinking about all that kind of stuff in terms of like, how do you introduce a kid to music taste? We listen to a big variety of stuff. Like, it's almost like a meme how much I love 2000s rock, but I listen to everything from country to synthwave to spoken word rap, whatever it is. And I look forward to just like making sure that like my spawn is into music as much as I am.
Well, Scott Tilford, that's all for episode one.
Yeah.
Episode two, we'll cover food. We'll cover a bit more industry stuff. We're going to talk way more about music, hobbies, television, and Japan and biscuits. So hopefully you'll come back next week, I assume.
Maybe this is just what we do now.
Do this. Yeah. It's been really nice. We're going to do it all again in about 5 minutes after I go for a week.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.